sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
But quite clearly you're wrong.
He stands between me and any trouble I'm causing.
You worms, that you. Don't chicken lips me. Interesting to talk about for change.
Do you know how many margaritas I had in Vegas last year?
Do you?
Don't you yawn. Do not
Well, here we are again on a Tuesday afternoon. You're with Evie and Lee. Thanks for joining us. We've had a true spring day today, from sunshine to pouring with rain. We've got a lovely show coming up today. We've got some talk. Evie wants to talk about some massage stuff. We want to talk about the Mount Barker pool been suggested. How can a mountain become a person? And there's some law changes coming up which we think you need to know. But first, welcome, Evie.
Hello.
How are you this
Newman.
Fine day?
Yeah, I'm good. It's miserable up this weather. I hate this weather.
Yeah, I know, but that's springtime for you, isn't it? You know, we know the good stuff's, well, 25 degrees yesterday, the day before.
How do you spoon in this sort of weather? You know, I can't see the birds and the bees spooning in this wet weather.
No, I know.
Isn't that what spring's all about?
It is what spring's all about. Now, spring's also about football finals now.
Yes.
And your team, I've got to say, your team's got there, hasn't it?
We're getting into the semi-finals. And by my team, we're talking about the Great Adelaide Crows, who are in the semi-final. However, our run is going to be very, very, very difficult.
Well, you still got to win. You still got to win away from home to win the finals anyway, don't you?
Do you know the setup? Listen.
Yeah, but I know, but you've got to go to Melbourne. If you're good enough, you've got to go to Melbourne and win away.
Well, you've got to go to Sydney.
Well, you know.
We've got to go to Sydney first, right? We're going to Sydney first.
Yep.
Out of all the six teams remaining, we're the only one that is staying in hotels. All of them don't have to do that. We have to have an overnight stay. And that is mainly because the Adelaide Airport curfew. We can't fly back on the Saturday night. So I think, Adelaide Airport, you should give us a little bit of dispensation and look after the football club and my Crows and let us arrive a little bit later than the curfew. I don't think a lot of people would mind, do you think?
Yeah,
bending
sure.
the rules for
yeah,
the football
sure. yeah,
team.
Yeah, 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 okay, yeah.
And then we've only got a 6-day break before we play Geelong for if we get that far in the prelim, and they've had a 2-week break, whereas the Bullies and the Hawks, well, they get 8 days.
That's interesting. And what will be interesting is the fact that Geelong will get to play at Cat Park, which is their home ground.
Yep.
I wonder whether Greater Western Sydney, just to go away from the Crows for a second, if you don't mind, whether they will play on their home ground.
I think they do.
Instead of Stadium Australia.
Oh, yeah.
See, because they're not going to get
numbers,
a big crowd, you wouldn't think.
Well, it depends on who GWS are playing. It'll either be Bullies or Hawks. I think if it's either, they'll come up. Because Bullies and Hawks are very traditional teams and very traditional supporters and long time. So
That's
I think
true.
Be full, absolutely full.
Now, the other thing is you had your birds of a feather thing, if you can remember anything about it, but we might talk about that a little bit later.
It was a very good function. Thank you very much.
That's true. But what I really want to cover, Evie, is the Paralympics. It's such a wonderful, wonderful thing to watch. I forgot just how great it is.
Don't you think that they're even greater Olympians than our great Olympians almost?
I agree.
I just think they are. I just think to go through life with whatever it is that life is challenging them by and go on to reach the Olympics and then to reach them to me is sensational, and to achieve a gold, is just unbelievable. I think these people are the ones that we should get our children to be looking up to as well.
I agree.
I just take my hat off to
them. So we've won 34 medals. I don't think that's important. That's what they're all training for. They want to do their best times, their personal best, their PBs, and the medals are the ultimate goal. But it's not, you know, I see them getting interviewed. And honestly, I've got tears, but they're tears of joy when I watch these people. They're humble, they're gracious, they've got an innocence that's not like the big stars.
Yeah.
And I just love seeing that. That's what is real to me.
Well, they've overcome it and shown that it can be done. And I've got to say, like Braden Davidson, he's just got the long jump. He got gold for us today. Mm. And he's got a Paralympic record, 5.62 metres. And then in the swimming... Tim Dixon, not Dixon, Diskin. He just won in the S9 100 metres freestyle at the pool with Brendan Hall silver. And that follows Matthew Cowdery's wins from 204 to 2012. So well done, Australia. Our cheers to you.
Absolutely.
Snitty on a cold night with a bit of mash and gravy.
Pepper sauce.
Yum, 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 yum. How good's that song, Winning Ugly by Rolling Stones?
Yeah.
From their, what is it, their Dirty Work album?
Dirty Work, yeah. And I could pick it as the as an 80s. You know, you had that echo in there. You had that style of drum beat.
See, I loved
it's classic.
It. I just loved it. And it's good when I'm stressed because, you know what, I am stressed about the finals, okay?
Oh, okay.
I
shouldn't you be stressed. Happy? Why can't you be happy and stressed
I'm
at the same time?
Because we could lose.
Okay.
And I had this little stress kit I made up for our Birds of a Feather event last Wednesday. And in it, it had a Mars bar, because you have to have chocolate. It had a stress ball.
Yeah. It's
because you've got to squish something when you're watching the game.
True.
I also put in some butter menthols, so that if you have, once you've got the yelling at the TV
yeah,
or at
good,
the game, you
good.
Need that. And what was my last bit
tissues.
On it? No, I didn't. Ha, 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 ha. Can't remember what the third thing was. Chocolate? Oh, a cup of tea. I put a tea bag in it because whether we win or lose, a cup of tea is always nice.
That's true. What about
end an evening?
The old Beck's. Lie down at a good Beck's.
You know, my mum used to devour Beck's and
oh,
Vincent
really?
Powders.
I don't know what's in them.
She had a headache all the time. I think it could have been Dad.
Yeah, obviously not you.
There was a two, and I remember a boss I worked for was shut up, Lee. We used to have to because he was an agoraphobic. He wouldn't go out and buy anything for himself. So whenever he ran out of stuff, you had to go down and buy it for him because okay. He wouldn't go shopping.
Oh, okay.
But he could get to work. But once he was in the office, it was okay. But trying to get him out to shop,
yeah,
he couldn't do it. He was an undercover agent because we used to be in a private investigation thing. And he could go and do that and sit in cars and do private investigation stuff.
Right.
But he couldn't then go and talk to the people or anything like that. Interesting character.
Absolutely.
He was really fascinating. Mm. But anyway, talking about stress.
Yeah.
Because he was a stress person too.
Okay, right? As you would be.
Yeah, as you would be with that kind of pressure. And I was just, the other day I had to go and get a massage because actually in all fact I have chronic pain always in my neck and my shoulders. Mm. Worse after a Tuesday.
yeah.
And I went the other day and you know all those shopping centres have got those massage places.
You pay by the minute.
Yeah, it's yeah. true. Well, yeah. I've got one and I really like going to it and there's a couple of people there that I always ask for.
Yes.
But this chap I had the other day, he was sort of getting into it and it was like, how much pain does one have to put up with when they have a massage? What's good and what's not? And I was sitting there and I thought, oh, I can cope with that, I can cope with that. Yep, all good. Yep, oh, yep. And then all of a sudden I caved because it was like, oh, seriously, tears are coming down my eyes, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But when you do that, that's deep remedial tissue massage and it's really good for you. But a lot of people go in there by the minute, as you said. That's useless. You're not doing anything.
Well, I don't know about a neck and a back. Is it like, you know when you get a neck and shoulder massage?
Yeah.
Do you think that's useful?
No, not for the time limit because all it will do is relieve it at that moment.
Okay.
But to get long-term benefit,
yeah.
They say an hour. You have to commit to an hour to get any benefit from it. Mm. And I just find, I see people coming in and out of there all the time for 10 minutes this and 10 minutes that. And it might be nice for the time limit, but to get that, say, for a week's benefit or something,
yeah,
you know, you should go longer.
Because there's lots of things that massage actually benefits, isn't there?
It's yeah, not, absolutely.
We're not just talking stress and tension, which is what a lot of people go
you know,
for.
Or pain. Well, you know, it's good for IBS and constipation. Did you know
yeah,
that?
Yeah, no, I did know. It's digestive. It works with your digestive system,
but that's where you have to be, like, brave and let them rub your stomach. But you can do it yourself, you know.
Massage yourself. That's like tickling yourself. You can't do that.
Yeah, you can. But you start down low, down near your groin,
right.
And you work up in little C's like this. Like you go C, rub up, then rub up.
Even on radio.
But I'm showing you and you can keep talking about it. But you do.
Okay, do it again. She's making a C shape on her stomach.
That's it.
And she's moving up and she's making another C shape. Oh, and a C shape.
You did that really right. well. But that's what it is. It's little circular motions, but only in a C shape, and you start at your groin and you work all your way up to under your boobies, or you know, and you do it right through. And they reckon that helps the digestive system and it helps the colon move those little toxic things that you got in your bowel to move.
That's good, because I had a massage fella called Colin, and he was actually really good. He came. He had all these cups that he used to put on my back. I used to have all these.
I've done the cups.
That bell would go off from time to time, and he actually did Reiki as well while he was doing it. So,
were you in a field?
I was feared for my life. I don't know about.
Is this when you were dressed as Goatman? You had the bell around your neck.
No, he's a lovely friend.
You know, they reckon you should take magnesium before you go and do a massage.
That would be a great thing. I've never thought about that.
Yeah, me either.
Just to relax you, of course.
Yeah, because I do it every day anyway. I take magnesium every day, but I've never thought of it specifically before a massage to do, because it relaxes the muscles and speeds up recovery.
Now, you are the health expert. Did you actually do massage with your course?
No.
Okay. So they say it's actually detoxing as well, and they ask that you drink water afterwards.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, because when you're releasing all the toxins out of your muscles, because you know how they get tight, well, what do you think's going in there? It's like an inflammatory process, and it's like if you have a sore, there's inflammation around that, isn't there? And it has to dissipate. Yeah. So it's going to go somewhere. So it has to go into your bloodstreams and that, doesn't it?
So we're sort of flushing it. That's what you're saying with the water.
Yeah, because, you know, and if you're dehydrated, where's it going to get stuck?
Yeah, I get it. Well, you know, I like the idea
this
of a massage.
This is my genius
I like the idea of going to Bali and getting a $2 massage.
Oh, my. You know, my dream is to be that wealthy in this world, in this time, so I can have a massage every day. I've got friends that hate them.
You could get it. You could import a Balinese person. Now, I'm not saying that from a racial perspective, because they'll be working here, and you could get massages every day because they know how to do it really well.
You know what? Well, they do, because they do it a lot. What actually I find interesting when I go to my particular place, they're all absolutely lovely Asian people, but they've all got Australian names now, and I just feel sorry for them that we can't, for some reason, be not allowed, but obviously we can't, some people can't put their tongues around some of the names, so they anglicise all their names. They'll go like, you know, Sally and Neil and John and Peter, and I think, but that's not your name.
I think that if you look back, because of my Italian heritage, but we always used to anglicise names as well. So, you know, everyone's Joe or Sam or whatever.
Yes.
Well, now you notice there's a lot more Massimos and Salvatores, and they're actually naming their kids. And I think it might be a generational thing, where hopefully in a generation or two, Asian, at the moment you're saying we can't pronounce their name very well.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll go back to having their proper names once we start to get used to saying that name properly.
Because it's just the way that their sounds come out and stuff. And and I'd like to be able to use their names.
Because
I think that's just respectful of them as well. I anglicised my name when I was younger.
Oh, did you? What'd you call yourself?
Well, now. What do you think, Lee? Take a wild guess. Well, getting blonder every day over there, Lee B.
Well, my mother refused that the rest of my cousins all got named one, because it's my grandfather's name. They all got named Pantaleo.
Yeah, I don't get that with you Italians and Greeks, where only one word name can go right through.
Well, no, you just have the respect for the father.
How long do you have to respect them for?
Well,
till they go to heaven.
I actually like the middle name to be respected. So my son has his middle name after my father.
Yeah, I like that.
And I like that.
Yeah, and I've done that with my eldest one. He's got dad's middle name.
So what's your real name?
Eva.
Well, it's close enough, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know.
Eva Gadsbrook, is that what I remember back?
Everlasting.
Oh.
Eva lovely, Eva gorgeous.
Evie.
Yes.
Back in 2009 in New Zealand, an installation of a law granting personhood and all the rights that we enjoy as people was begun for a river. Now, that might sound odd to you, but now it's actually happened. And the latest edition that I saw recently was the Te Uruwera National Park has been granted what they say is personhood. Now, this has all the rights, powers, duties and liabilities of a legal person, and it can defend itself against corporations, not to impose on their on its rights.
Okay.
Now, what that's do you think?
Very
of this?
Sounds very complicated.
Well, it is, but what it's basically saying is this: this river or this national park or whatever is deemed to be granted personhood is the same as us, and we can't be imposed upon.
Because it's sort of they're saying it's alive, isn't it? It's a living part of Earth, isn't it? Of the environment is what they're saying,
yeah,
aren't
yeah.
they? That's interesting because
it's bold, isn't it?
It is very bold because I'm wondering when who's going to be its advocate when there's a complaint? Who actually is in charge?
Probably another government department, I imagine. But you know, there'd be obviously a constitutional law has been changed to protect this.
So no one owns it now.
It's above ownership.
It's
not about no. That's right. It's not about ownership. Exactly right.
Yeah,
that's a really good point.
Yeah, that's interesting. And why did they do it? Was it to do with because I know the dear Maori people, they are often the same position as our Indigenous people, where they try and get us to respect the lands and you know rivers, and because they do see it as all living.
Well, they in fact they of course signed a treaty, so they have much greater powers than our Aboriginal in bringing laws to the fore. But you're right; they appreciate the land and consider it to be part of them, as opposed to something we just use.
It's interesting because I didn't realise that corporations have equal also enjoy the rights of being of human, like being human rights as a corporation. And they're not human beings. I don't get how a corporation has those rights. So,
well, they've got certain laws that
allow that
govern them, and they can come. They can put a effectively. You can put a mine anywhere you want.
So now they can't in there because that's another personhood. That area. What was the name of the
national park?
Yeah, the park.
The Te Uruwera.
So a corporation who's a human being or a personhood cannot go into the Te Uruwera. Yeah. I'm sorry. apologies for not saying that correctly. So that then in itself, that's a personhood. So that means they have to be equal respect. Oh, that's good.
Well, that's of course unless it's beneficial for what they're doing. But, you know, if they're just going to come in there and like we have in Kakadu where the ranger mine is, you know, destroying areas.
See, that's disrespectful to the land.
Oh, absolutely.
This is where, and a lot of people say, oh, you're talking like greenies and that. Well, not to me. That's just looking after certain parts of the world because that's what breathes life into our atmosphere is all those forests and all those lands and all that sort
Kakadu's
of thing.
Kakadu's an interesting one because...
I love Kakadu.
Well, it was owned for about 40,000 years by the first owners.
Yeah.
And then it changed hands.
Yeah.
And for about 200 years. And it's recently half of it at least has been given back to the local Indigenous people.
And they will look after it. They will tend to it with tender loving care. They will. And the corporations can't go in there and mess it up.
Well, whether it's looked after or whether it's left as it should be, either way it's being looked after, isn't it?
It's an interesting thing, personhood, because I knew that I think it was Spain that brought in personhood for great apes. They were given legal personhood rights. Gosh, I think it was back, well, like 2007, something like that. Spain did it. And do you know who followed it up? Funnily enough, we're talking about New Zealand. New Zealand granted strong protections to 5 great ape species.
Oh, that's interesting. What's apes doing in New Zealand?
I don't know, but they did it. They gave them 5 great ape species, and it was back in... They did it even before the February one in Spain. It was 1999. And there is no one in New Zealand is to research, test or try and teach an ape because it's a person or personhood. So respect its limitations or whatever, and you can't go forcing on it. You can't do experimentation on them.
So I was thinking, jokingly, I was going to say, well, we could do it on elephants because it makes no difference to us. But what they're saying is that you basically can't keep an elephant in a zoo.
Well, exactly
If it's not in its natural habitat and to the benefit of the elephant. So I guess any country can extend that to wherever they want. What places in Australia would you give personhood to that you think needs to be granted its own rights?
Great Barrier Reef.
Definitely.
Straight off the top of my head.
Yep.
You said Kakadu. I would go there. I think Great Barrier Reef's in big trouble. I think we've over commercialised it. Too many people are visiting it and just doing anything argy-bargy along there. Even our rivers. I think we've got to be careful about our rivers, you know, at the moment, because I love our river.
The Murray River's an interesting one, isn't it? Where do you go with this carp thing that's going on? You know, what we really need to do is clean the river.
do you know the carps can live like we went fishing there one day, right?
Yeah.
And we got a carp, and you're supposed to them yeah. when you catch them, and Uncle Max did that and threw it on the bank. Do you know? I've heard that they can actually come back from that, but we actually had a carp that we like with the you know chopped it off, yeah. and we put it in a basket to get yabbies.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Put it in overnight. Next morning when we pulled it out, it was still the gills were still going. This is how strong they are.
Well, I believe, now I might be proven correct, but I believe they can live on the side of the bank for 2 weeks.
That's what I've heard.
Without water.
Well, that was without its body.
It's very difficult. But they've got this new herpes thing they can do with the carp now.
Oh, the virus thing. I'm scared about that,
Lee. Well, the thing is, what they're saying is if you put it in the river, there's just going to be mass pollution because all the carp will just up and die.
Yeah.
But maybe it's a great amount of pain for a great amount of benefit in the long run. Maybe in the end it's only a small amount of pain.
But can they guarantee that that will not then transgress into other species?
Well, that's what CSIRO do.
Yeah, but they're not always right.
Mm. Well, I'm fair to trust them. I'm not going to say that they can't.
Well, look at the millipede. You know, and what that was supposed to do. Can and all it did was make itself happy.
Damn thing can live 2 weeks, apparently, outside.
I was looking at this magazine the other day. I think it's Good Health or something like that. And I was reading this article, Lee, about a guy that had a near-death experience.
Oh, yeah.
And I was reading it, and it was really interesting what he went through, you know, regarding it, you know, whether he had lights or things turning up. And it made me look at a few others. But in his case in particular, something stuck with me. It was when he said, when he was talking to whoever he met over the other side, that before that moment, his little life flashed in front of him, right?
Mm.
And it was moments where he'd been kind to people and had made their life better and happy. And then there were those moments that flashed before him that he wasn't so nice and kind.
Mm.
And I was thinking about that today. I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to be reminded of those moments. Because if you really think about it and you think, gee, if my life flashed before me, what would I, you know, what would I see?
That means you've got a conscience.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people without a conscience that don't have any flashes.
Well, I just cringed a few times. I thought, yeah. Oh, geez, I don't really want to go through that.
Yeah, but the thing is the people with a conscience hopefully learn from those experiences so we don't have them so often. But that's not to talk about your life and death experience.
No.
Because it all seems to be about flashing lights, doesn't it? Big white lights.
Well, what I don't like is what science puts it down to. They take away the magic or the mystery of near-death experiences because they don't listen to the people that have actually gone through them.
And come back.
Yeah, and actually come back. Mm. And most of them said they've been sent back. Like this, there was this guy, what was his name? Robin Michelle, and it's Robin, a male, and he's from Texas. And he said, in his words, he said, and it, you know what, this, people are going to think I'm a bit nutty, but something...
I don't think we need to worry about that. Just keep going.
Okay. Because something similar to me happened. Not that I had a near-death experience, but I did have a visitor one night. Anyway, so he saw this figure standing in the light shaped like a normal human being but without any facial features, right? And he knew it was a masculine presence. And he said there seemed to be some kind of light emanating from this figure, but he said he felt really protected and safe and loved. And he was told through what he now knows as mental telepathy, because the experience I had was very similar.
Right.
And you when you're trying to grasp words for that, mental telepathy is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it said it must go back and it's not his time. And the voice kept repeating it wasn't his time and he had a purpose to fill and he had to go back and complete it. So that's interesting, isn't it? Because the people get the floating above. They're either in an operating room or they've been in an accident and they actually feel their spirit leave the shell of the body.
They become voyeuristic over their own body.
Yeah. And I just find that really fascinating.
I think it's nice the ones that the cases that you've given where they come back for a greater purpose.
Yeah. Well, the first one I told you about, he came back and he was a really high up psychiatrist in that.
Yes.
He ended up leaving that. He had a big home. He swapped with someone who needed it for his family, and he went into a small home, and he's taken a more spiritual path, and he couldn't be happier.
Mm.
And he knew that he had to give back because he was taking and taking, but not giving back. So that's interesting.
There's something on the other side, and science doesn't know how to explain it, so therefore...
Well, they try, and I don't like it.
In our society, we don't therefore agree that that is possible because, you know, there can't be. But I know myself, when I was... a younger man, one of my friends died very early, and on the face of my phone, for no explainable reason, there was a logo put on the front of my phone that nobody knows what it is, where it came from. It stayed there for the day after.
Oh, wow.
But there were a whole range, when we met at his funeral, there were a whole range of incidents, and they all seemed to be basically strangely electronically based. I don't know how that happens.
Yep.
But, you know, phones buzzing when they're turned off, lights going on and off.
Yep.
An alarm system for one of my mates that had to give the eulogy, and the alarm system went off on its own in his house to basically say, get out of there, it's time to get going, you don't want to be late.
See?
It's things that are unexplainable. Science can't do it, so it makes us sound weird.
The electronic thing is, I think, is right, because I used to have a cousin, and he was a cheeky little bugger. He used to... get the speakers in his sister's room, and he would turn them into microphones, and so he used to be able to listen to our conversations at night. And then,
yeah, okay,
it was terrible, and he was a genius, mind you. But you know, and this one night we're laying in bed and we're talking away in what we thought was the privacy of the bedroom.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you hear I'll call him Cubby, that's his nickname to me. His little voice booms over the speakers, and he plays back everything we just said. And we were going to kill him. He was a bugger of a boy, but absolute genius. But that happened to us. We used to have, we still do, but we had to disconnect it. It was a fan over the shower, right? And every time I was upset or got concerned or stressed, the thing would turn on.
Oh, really? By itself? How else would it turn on? By a switch?
I have to switch it on. Right? And it would just switch on. And it was every time I would be thinking negative thoughts, right? Yep. And I put it down to my mum visiting and smacking me one over the head. That's how I put it.
Have you read Carrie?
No.
Is that a Stephen King book?
No, I don't want to. Stephen King scares the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is very Stephen Kingish.
Well, my daughter doesn't want to know about this. But anyway, and it used to turn on. And then this one day I was like negative and it turned on. Mm. And I went, you know, seriously, Mum? I started talking to the fan. So it's not like I'm mad, am I?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I get it, all right? I get it. I walk out of the room, out of the bathroom, walk into my room, go straight back to negativity. Straight away the thing came back on again.
I'll get out.
No, I swear to God.
If you were going to bring anyone back, would you bring back Frank Sinatra?
Elvis.
Is that right?
And Frank. Dean Martin.
We'll see what we get here. Evie, there's the local pool here at Mount Barker. Now, it's lost $850,000 in the last 3 years. It's expected to lose $300,000 this year. Now, we're talking $6,000 a week. It's losing. Now, it needs to be done up or a new one built. The council general manager, has justifiably, I think, questioned the viability of the facility and the value of undertaking any major repairs. I think we've got to consider the kids. I mean, you know, of course, but, you know, the council also has to consider the monetary aspect of this as well. Have you
a little rumour going around that the council knows that they can't fix up this one.
Right.
And that they might be looking, you know, that they have to either build a whole new one or not at all, I suppose. I'm not sure, but they're looking at building somewhere else. But where do you build as well? But you know, Lee, those running costs, right, $300,000.
That's how much they're losing. That's not the running costs.
Okay, well, that's what they're losing.
Yeah.
They're only open 4.5 months.
That's interesting.
4.5 months a year. They're opening from November 1st and they close on March the 31st. They operate from 6 till 9 generally. They have sort of like a 6 to 8 for laps, then a 9 to something, and then 6 till 9 for, you know, generally at night and different weekends and that. But it's, say, 6 to 9, 4.5 months, and they're losing money.
Well, that means they're losing when they're open. They're probably losing something like $10,000 a week.
Exactly, because that's $300,000 in financial year for 4.5 months. So are people not going there? Is the turnstile not turning over? It's only a big pool and two little baby pools. They're heated, and that's it.
But I think we need this up in the hills here. I mean, Mount Barker's the central and the biggest town here in the hills region, and there needs to be a swimming pool. I think for all reasons, you know, for sport as much as recreation.
Well, you know, it might be up to the new member for Mayo, Rebecca Sharkey, to lobby the federal government for funds, because we can't do it on our own up here.
No, that's right. I agree with you with that one there.
You know, and the kids should be able to do it. Up here we've got everything else. We've got football ovals, tennis courts, soccer pitches, netball courts, got everything. I think you need a pool. I remember when I was young, I lived in an area not anywhere near water, and the local pool was my salvation on summer days, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and me too, and you get masses of people around. Do you think the fact that people can afford their own pools these days is starting to take away the necessity?
That's a valid point. That's an absolutely valid point. But I don't know, community, where do you go as a person that wants to do laps and get well? You're not going to do that in your backyard.
No, and you can't. And that's, you know, maybe it's a marketing thing up here. They've got to promote their pool a bit more. But the council's actually pretty good. If you have a look around at what they do offer children, like they've got the skate park, which is terrific out there.
Yeah.
There's a new library being built. Now, that's not specifically for children, but, you know, the whole community gets to go along with that. The beautiful new, or you know, developed council chambers are
a part of the deal. No, there's a new swimming pool on this hand, or do we have to look at hospitals, transport, and education up here?
See, that's where this infrastructure is a really dangerous thing, isn't it? And it needs to be community consulted, and I think the state government needs to play a major role in this, because we can't become like Cuba, you know, with all these old derelict buildings everywhere, because no one's got any money to fund anything anymore, and our whole community just keeps going down. That's no good. That doesn't work.
Especially up here, because I don't know if you're aware, but Mount Barker is on track to becoming the second largest city in South Australia. So we're talking a huge amount of people.
That's massive, isn't it? Mount Gambier's the second?
I don't know. It must be Mount Gambier. Mount Barker's about to outdo them all.
Wow. And that's really interesting as a, what would we call it, a satellite town that's not being offensive, is it?
To me, it's satellite city, but it's not, because it's been old and it's around, but the surrounds that people are coming in are creating a bigger footprint, aren't they?
Absolutely.
And, look, not everyone can afford a backyard pool. Some people don't want them. The upkeep of them, and also water restrictions. Do you do with a pool with water restrictions?
Oh, no. I guess it comes down to who's using it, when and how. But
yeah.
I would have thought maybe a better option would be to build one with a roof.
I was thinking
used all year round.
Yeah, all year round.
Because that covers what you said, where it can only be used for a short period of
time.
And
making it a lipping quite. And don't they have diving? Like, well, why wouldn't you have a diving pool to help everyone? You know, like, this is your future Olympians here.
Yeah, I'd go diving.
Yeah. Cockles.
Might be a very interesting sight. Oh, people like that. Might like that idea. Evie, in last week's fish and chip wrapper, I uncovered this story. It says sex charge man gets off, and strangely enough, I've got a picture right next to it of Kim Jong Un, the leader of North Korea, and I'd like to think it's a coincidence, but I don't think it is a coincidence. I reckon they've been a bit cheeky by doing that. Anyway,
putting his picture like next to that
story, next to that article.
Holy moly!
Anyway, I'm sure he doesn't read the advertiser. but the interesting story here is that Italy's highest court has legalised masturbating in public after a 69-year-old pensioner, let's call him Pietro, because that's his name, was overturned. He was given 3 years initially. It was overturned because he claimed that he only does it occasionally.
Where?
Now, in public, quite obviously.
Isn't that sort of a pervert?
Well, we're talking about Italy here.
Isn't that a flasher?
It took the case to court, went all the way to Rome, which has ruled that masturbating in public was not an offence as long as it is discreet and not done in the presence of minors. So, you know, if we look out on the main street here, on Gawler Street, and there's someone sitting out on a little bench and he's discreetly gone about his business. I don't know whether we should... is that a law that we want in Australia?
Listen!
Can we tolerate that? It's too crazy.
Us women who breastfeed our children are absolutely vilified by so many people in so many shops and restaurants on buses. And we are here in Italy are saying it's cool to masturbate on a street as long as you're doing it in a quiet little spot under a rug or something. Are you serious?
Well, you know, it's open to all sexes, I'm sure. It's not gender specific.
Well, I think it's a little bit harder for some than others.
Maybe so.
Oh, my goodness.
I just think it's hilarious. I think it's so absurd.
What kind of
thing? This is where law is.
Where are you opening the door to? It's like all the perverts from around the world are going to go
that's
to
true.
Rome.
It'll be holidays, won't it?
Where the Vatican is, the Catholic Church, Vatican in Rome, in its own little town, and then all around it you've got people doing naughties.
Do you know what we need to do?
Right.
We need to get Phil Hoffman in. And we need to get him to talk about a tour that to Rome.
Yeah, I might leave out that bit because I'm going to give him a call and ask him to come in because you know what? He turned 70 the other day and I think he's had his travel business for about 36 years and he's just someone I absolutely tip my hat off to from growing it from a one-man band to turning it into like a I don't know, it's not a franchise, but he's got stores not only in this state but all over Australia.
Is he all Australia now?
Yes.
I'd never realised that.
Yeah, he's a big deal now. You be nice to him. we can do an Evie and Lee cruise. We'll take him to Rome. I don't want to go there now. Every time I walk past someone, if I ever go there, I'll be going, Looky.
I was going to say we're taking Rome for a bit of comic relief, but that might be...
Listen, I'm not going to talk about it anymore because I've got some terrible sayings that are coming into my mind, which are very funny but very inappropriate for this time. But I can't get over that, Lee. That shocked me.
Anyway, you had some things because we were going to talk about law.
Yeah, well, I'm not going there after speaking about that because it really is not appropriate.
Oh, okay then. But okay, are you going to go there?
Or well, I want to talk about something else.
Okay, so what interests me
are you squeaking? Do you need oil on that seat?
Oh, no, I can't help it, and I can't help but wiggle sometimes. But that's a whole other issue. But what interests me here is the penalties, the penalties that people are given. So, and sometimes they're considered inadequate. So in this case, they challenged it. But what's the difference, therefore, in giving someone a penalty? The difference between rehabilitation and retribution. So if you want to, if someone, let's say, murders somebody, so let's go the extreme level, the victims of that crime want that person to pay. They want to pay severely for what they've done.
Nah.
Now, in terms of retribution, that's where we're going with that. In terms of rehabilitation, if this is something out of character and they're not ever likely to do again, why would you want to put that person in jail for 20 years?
Well, this guy here that you've talked about, he's okay a oncer, but to make it... Did you say it's become law that that's legal for anyone to be doing this?
Well, now it is, because he only does it occasionally. As long as it's discreet and not done in the presence of minors, it will be, overlooked.
Oh, my goodness. What if you're a flasher? You know, there are people...
Well, that's not discreet, and nor are they probably concerned with minors.
Oh, rehabilitation's an interesting thing because we're at the moment, our government here in South Australia is looking at that on many levels. And I don't know if you know, recently there was a little bit of chaos, I suppose. No, that's not the word. There was an outcry because there were prisoners that were brought in to umpire... the local leagues, footy, you know. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting. And I get what they're trying to do, but, you know, one of the guys was a murderer and rapist. He's been convicted of murder and rape, and he's part of this rehabilitation thing. I don't know, where does it stop? Like, at what point where's rehabilitation and what's a threat to children that are playing football?
So this is to a children's league?
Well, it's to me, anyone under 30's child.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So
anyone playing football?
Yeah, anyone.
You wouldn't be answering him back.
Well, you wouldn't. And it was, I don't know if you'd like, Peter Milonakis, he's the corrections minister, mm-hmm. He did not realise that these prisoners, or particularly this one, had this sort of conviction against him. Now, he wants to back the program, and I get it. But, you know, it's people are asking, should serious criminals be approved to be doing this and umpiring amateur football games?
Well, when you say serious criminals, at some point they're going to get let out. At some point that person is going to be considered rehabilitated.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case and they're ready to come up on parole and they are rehabilitated to the point that they're not a danger to the public, then the fact that they're serious criminals, you can start to waylay that.
Yeah. Well, that's what Malinowska said. He said some of the acts that people are in jail for are appalling and I can't say the word he used, egregious,
okay.
Egregious, something like that. I can't pronounce it. But he said the courts make the decision about sentence length and they hope that, even the worst crimes they want to give back to the community, then that's a positive.
Mm.
So I get it, but, you know, does a person get labelled forever for what they did? Because there are people that have murdered someone, but it's been in a family thing where a woman's been... Not that I'm okaying it, okay? I'm not getting into that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are times when things happen and get out of control.
Mm.
That person probably won't ever re-offend,
no.
But they could be known as a murderer. But where does it start and where does it stop?
Well, I suppose that's for the courts to decide. I've just finished reading a book by Helen Garner, which is about Joe Chinque, which is a young fellow that was murdered by his girlfriend while she was on drugs. And they made a case for the fact that she will get off drugs and therefore she won't do that sort of thing.
And she'll be rehabilitated. Although they're changing that law, aren't they? That at the moment it's before the courts or whatever and that they're going to say you can't get away with saying you're a drunk or on drugs.
But the fact is they won't do it again. Yeah. You know, if they get off of that, then they won't do it. So you sort of say, okay,
but then
this is the rehabilitation retribution thing.
They decided to become that person that drank it.
I think they're still responsible. I don't think you can say they're not responsible, but the penalty is what we're talking about.
Well, now that they're not going to have that as a loophole anymore, they're going to take that away. But there is a conspiracy theory going around that it's not so much that our government wants to rehabilitate people, it's the fact that our jails are full and they're not wanting to put many more in and they're trying to get some out. Because we don't have enough space. That's the conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? You'd like an upfront. I don't think we ever hear the truth about what's really going on.
Any of it.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. That's the problem.
Right. Let's have a song. We'll come back with something a little more cheery.
Lee.
Yes.
I finally have an answer. Thank you, Lee. And it's 100.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for giving me that.
What, that's your next birthday?
Yeah.
So you're saying?
Laugh, I didn't start. I have an answer to why I feel bad when I fly in certain directions. I've always noticed that when I fly, well, say I fly to London, I feel okay.
You're big noting yourself again, aren't you? Yeah,
no,
I fly
I'm
to
not.
London, I fly to New York.
Where's my children? My doctor son and my daughter that's in
I've been on the red carpet.
And they're on the London. And I'm going to London. We both, you know why? Because it's cheap. We can get there really cheap these days.
That's true.
I've only been there twice and one of them was on one of those $500 returns when I was a child. And it is, when you go that way, I'm okay. But when I fly back, I'm not. And it's the same going to America. I remember really badly having a migraine and when I landed, I was ill as ill. And
so when you fly east?
East, I feel bad. And I finally have the answer and science has provided it.
Okay.
And it's apparently our circadian clock or our circadian rhythm. Do you know what that even means?
No.
Me either. But I got excited and went, oh, well, I'm going to look up what circadian rhythm means. And what it is, it's your brain's clock that regulates sleeping and feeding patterns and like your alertness, your core body temperature, your brainwave activity, your hormone. Don't, because I'm seriously, hormone production, regulation of glucose, insulin, it does everything, right? And it's a fabulous clock. And I actually got a little picture of it because I loved it because it tells you what your body does in 24 hours. And that's called a circadian clock. And apparently when you fly east, it takes longer for your body to recover from jet lag because it disrupts the brain cells far more than travelling west because the time it's something to do about time, that our body actually works on 24.5 hours, not actually 24. So isn't that interesting? So it's because of my brain clock. My brain's clock. It's got it wrong. I love it.
That's really interesting.
So I've got it. It is. So do you want to have a look at this clock? I'm going to show you. When do you think's the best time?
Even on radio.
Look, all right. This is, you'll like this. When's the highest testosterone secretion in the body?
It's actually when you sleep.
No, it's not. You have that right. I'm having a look. I've got to read this.
And the reason I know that is because they say with sports and bodybuilders, when you go and do all your training, you should go home and go to sleep so your testosterone level rises.
Yeah, no, it's 9 o'clock in the morning according to this.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so like your melatonin, you know, when you want to sleep, that starts kicking in at 9 o'clock at night. That's why you start getting sleepy. Well, some people do, I don't. Okay. But about 9 o'clock, your melatonin, which is the sleep hormone, that starts kicking in about that. About 10:30, your bowels start shutting down. They don't need to start working. I suppose this is on a normal time frame where people probably get up at about 7:30.
So we condition our bodies basically to be this way.
Yeah, to mimic this.
And our body reacts in, you know, so obviously we all do that, but then we travel and we throw our time clock out.
Absolutely. And, you know, and the testosterone thing that men would like to know about is 9 o'clock in the morning. Apparently.
Well, that's an interesting, yeah, I know what you're saying there.
I wasn't saying it, but when you gave me that look, I said, okay, yep.
Yeah. That gives rise to another thought of mine, that in football, you know,
I tried to hold it in.
No, you know when teams travel west to Western Australia to play, they've got to travel west.
Yes.
So what you're saying is that's an easy trip.
Yeah.
Whereas West Coast, when they play in Melbourne, for example, have to travel east.
And it's more
so
difficult.
It throws them out more. Yeah, so they're at a disadvantage generally.
Yeah. So the jet lag is heavier for those times. So that, again, another thing why the Crows have got something against them, because for all our games we're travelling east. See, this is why the Melbourne Victorian people have got it made with their teams all living there. Because they only ever travel west.
So here's the conspiracy that
they
you're
only
about.
Travel west.
Very interesting.
They're coming home east.
Yep.
They travel
west. They've got plenty
west.
Of time to recover.
Exactly.
Evie, what I want to ask you is if you can remember your Birds of a Feather show that you had last week. Now,
Friday.
I made light of it. I don't mean to make light of it at all because you raise some terrific money for charities while you go through that. How did that all go?
I thought you were going to dob me in because of my statement.
But for your absent-mindedness.
My absent-mindedness. But it went really, really well. We had Peter Caven in.
Oh, glad you remember that.
From the 97-98 finals. He was a grand finalist. He actually was the guy that shut down Carey in 98.
Mm.
And Carey only got to kick one goal
him. But he's also the guy who got smashed by Tony Lockett years earlier.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, when he actually had to go to hospital. I think it actually broke his jaw.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah,
it was awful. Cavo's actually a comedian now, so was he humorous?
He was so funny. He was so good. And he actually shared a letter from Robert Shaw with us, which actually sort of had a little bit of a dig at him because it was sort of saying that he left Fitzroy to go up to Sydney for the money. And, you know, because that's when it all started happening. But obviously Robert Shaw forgave him because he's the one that got Cavo to come to our club and he became part of our grand final team.
Yeah,
so that was really good. He was great. And also I've got to pay tribute to Phil Harper. He came in as well and he gave us an insight because he joined us in 98 and to let us know how things have changed from coaching in those days. He said, look, it was like about three people. Now we've got about 30 doing the jobs that only three used to do and what the preparation is like, et cetera. So he was brilliant as well and it was good money raised for
what were the
White
charities
Ribbon
that you,
yep. and Ovarian Cancer Research is ours. We're an all-female group and so that's why the money goes to those two.
Yeah, that's terrific that you go to that trouble, Evie, I think. And I'm sure everybody appreciates.
Oh, they loved it. We had so much fun. Yeah, we always have fun.
And as I've seen your shows before, you organise things really well. And you put on a terrific show. Evie, it's time to finish. So
okay.
Our time's up again this Tuesday. I can't believe it goes by so quick. But
And you're shouting me dinner tonight for a delayed birthday.
Yes, I will. I'll be very happy to do that. And
what are we doing? Burger? Chips?
Yeah. thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to your company again next week.